Just got back from Jamaica. Tan almost everywhere. Jan almost everywhere. Hee hee.
Gotham Sports Network presents NYG Weekly.
NYG Weekly, Ethan Weiss here with you once again. Before we get into everything, Eli Manning is back, Daniel Jones is injured, and John Mara has not sold the team, unlike his New York counterpart. So before we get into it, we got to take care of the housekeeping. You know what you got to do? You got to follow us on Twitter. Follow me at EthanGSN, follow Weiss at NYG Daily, follow the blog at GothamSN. Subscribe. We're on iTunes, Audioboom, Google Play, Stitcher Radio, Spotify. Subscribe, unsubscribe, resubscribe, rate us 5 stars, leave us a kind review. All right, no sponsors for today's episode, but in place we do have a special guest, Matt Lombardo, New York Giants beat writer for the Star Ledger and NJ.com. You can follow him on Twitter at Matt Lombardo NFL. Matt, I guess we could start at first. Do you want to address the accusations that you are, in fact, an Eagles fan?
What's going on, boys? Thanks for having me on.
Yeah,
just because I covered the Eagles for the last 5 years and the first 6 years of my career and did talk radio in Philadelphia doesn't mean that I actually cheer for the Eagles or any NFL team. Let's put that out there right there, because honestly, if you want to do this job well and you want to rise in the media business, especially covering the NFL or covering sports, you can't be a fan of the team that you cover. I mean, I think there's people on the Giants beat and on the Eagles beat that I work alongside of who you might be able to tell, you know, cheer for the team that they cover, but that's you can't do that job and do it well with a team that you root for. Anybody who follows me on Twitter knows that I'm unabashedly a Penn State football fan, Penn State season tickets. And I'll tell you this, that as soon as I got into this industry, I channeled all of whatever fan emotions I have into that team. So not an Eagles fan, not a Giants fan, not an NFL fan. I told people this all the time when I covered the Eagles, and I tell people it all the time now. My check clears on Friday, whether the Eagles or the Giants win or lose. So no allegiances in the NFL, and certainly I'm enjoying covering the beat up in New York. I think the Giants locker room is fascinating, full of some really interesting personalities. At least it was last year, my first year on the beat.
And certainly
I have to say that, you know, my colleagues, the Jordan Ronans and Pat Leonards and Ryan Dunleavy's and Dan Duggan's of the world have welcomed me with open arms, Art Stapleton and Tom Rock as well. Some really great people. Bob Glauber on this beat. Been very welcoming and very accommodating and very helpful. So I appreciate those guys and appreciate you guys having me on.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you're sort of leading into the first topic of conversation. You're talking about different personalities in the locker room and the general mood. So obviously today, Eli Manning is back, probably just for a game or two, not for the remainder of the season. What's the general
mood? We don't know that.
Well, you know, we don't. You're right. Depends how cautious the team wants to be, like they were with Saquon and his high ankle sprain a few weeks ago. I personally believe it would benefit the team if Eli Manning started and lost the last 4 games of the season. I feel like at least the general tone from some of the E-Hive on Twitter has been that Eli Manning is actually capable of helping the Giants win out or at least steal a couple of games. I think people truly forget how bad he was last season and early on this season. But I digress. What's the general mood been in the locker room with Dan Jones taking a temporary seat to Eli Manning?
Yeah, I think a lot of guys were surprised, right, when they showed up at practice and Daniel Jones was on the side.
Absolutely.
And
I mean, he finished out the game.
Yeah, and that's the thing. And let's start there, because, again, Daniel Jones is hurt. He has the high ankle sprain and all that. And there were moments in that game where I didn't think he looked quite right. There were a couple throws. And I was pretty critical in the post-game report card, which I write every week, by the way. People seem to think that I make Daniel Jones the story every single week because he's the big story. But, no, that's how it works out with the workflow with Daryl Slater and Steve Politi. And I handle covering Daniel Jones. And I was pretty critical of him on Sunday because I thought there were a couple of times where you could tell that he was throwing off of his back foot. And the mechanics didn't quite seem right. And you saw him overthrow Sterling Shepard pretty high in the second half on one of those 3 interceptions. You saw him telegraph a pass early on. Now, how much of that was because he was banged up, I don't know. But I think it's interesting is the word I'll say, that Daniel Jones is a guy who played through a high ankle sprain in his bowl game with Duke last year. He only missed 3 weeks due to a broken clavicle that you think would sideline most quarterbacks at least 6 to 8 weeks. He only missed three games. And he played all through the second half after going into the blue medical tent. And I asked him today, point blank at his locker, was that when you got hurt, or was there another play later in the game that caused this injury? And he said, no, that was it. And he knew that something wasn't quite right with the ankle, but didn't think that it would be anything that kept him from playing. So just me personally, I think it's interesting that he's not starting and unlikely to start Monday night in Philadelphia against the Eagles. It wouldn't surprise me if we've seen the last of Daniel Jones for this season, because remember, you guys alluded to it, Saquon Barkley missed three games and he hasn't been quite right since. So he played really well on Sunday, I thought, with the 83 rushing yards and getting involved in the passing game again. But I don't know that we're going to see Daniel Jones on the field again. And part of that's probably due to the injury. And part of that, I think, is John Mara and Steve Tisch and the ownership group, A, wants to be cautious about Daniel Jones's future. And I wouldn't rule out some faction, or at least some fraction of a belief, that they want to get Eli Manning on the field at MetLife Stadium at least one more time before the end of the season, because Pat Shurmur said that, hey, barring an injury, that was not the plan.
Yeah, I think the one weird thing is, and we talk about like how it's so surprising that, you know, this injury is, we're hearing about it like today, but it seems like it's been a common theme with this team where like a guy, you know, he gets injured and we think it's minor because he finishes out the game. And it's happened a lot with these concussions. And then Pat Shurmur comes out on Monday and is like, oh, it's normal wear and tear. And then Tuesday, Wednesday come along and they're in the concussion protocol or they have a high ankle sprain.
Game soreness has landed more guys on the injured reserve than anything else this season, right?
Right.
And I wrote it on Monday after the conference call with Pat Shurmur when he said that Daniel Jones was just going through some, you know, general game soreness and he anticipated him being fine. My antenna went up right then and there because I've heard this many, many times from Pat Shurmur, this general soreness. The next thing you know, guys are out 2-3 weeks. It happened to Evan Engram. We saw it, as you talked about, with Sterling Shepard with the concussions. We saw it with some other guys with the concussions. So I thought something was up right then and there. I don't understand whether or not as forthright with injuries, especially this one where it's not a concussion, where a guy goes into the protocol. And I wrote on Monday that as much as Pat Shurmur can say that Daniel Jones is expected to play on Monday in practice, we won't know for sure until Wednesday. And he was not out there. He was in the walking boot. And another thing I found kind of intriguing was the fact that after he got done with his interview, he took off the walking boot and walked into the hallway without the boot. So is this just a walking boot that he needs on the practice field? Did he not need the boot? Did he need a new boot resized? What was going on there? But just something that I found interesting as we kind of pull the layers off of this onion of why Eli Manning is playing on Monday night, possibly beyond, and not Daniel Jones.
Yeah, certainly interesting. You know, you sort of touched on it in your answer about the brain trust of John Mara and Steve Tisch, and I'm sort of going out of order a little bit, but you know, certainly unique for, I don't even want to say unique, it's sort of rare. I feel like we only hear from Steve Tisch once a year, if that, and we heard from him a couple days ago, and you know, not a happy guy, and for someone who generally seems to keep his nose out of the day-to-day operations of the New York Giants and just sort of has his name on the papers and signs the checks, what did you take away from Steve Tisch's comments? Because from my perspective, it's a butting of heads between him and John Mara and the sort of wanting to shake up the status quo.
Yeah, Ethan, I think you're absolutely right there. I think that if John Mara had it his way, the Giant way would continue to be the path forward for this organization. And I think that Steve Tisch sees what's happened here over the last 3 years, sees the fact that since the start of the 2017 season, no team has won fewer games than the Giants' total of 10 over that stretch. I think that he's seen the talent drain under Dave Gettleman the last two off seasons, and kind of the shine being off much of that 2018 draft class, where you can say Saquon Barkley's hurt, and that's probably a factor in this, but Will Hernandez, as I wrote today on NJ.com, he's regressed pretty dramatically, especially as a run blocker, Nate Solder's contract has been an albatross. We can talk all we want about number 13 and how he's having a down year in his first year in a system where everybody seems to be having a down year with Freddie Kitchens as the head coach in Cleveland. But I think that Steve Tisch sees what's going on here. And I think that, you know, I don't know that we're in for a power struggle over the offseason. I don't know if they're in disagreement over the future of Pat Shurmur, because I think the loss to the Jets, and if they would happen to lose to the Miami Dolphins, and that would be 10 straight losses if they lose these next two games, I think his fate has been sealed. And you can make a case that he would not be the head coach in week 16 potentially. But I think where the power struggle is going to come in is over whether to move forward with Dave Gettleman as the GM or have a complete cleaning of the house. And I wouldn't rule that out, because I thought that it was pretty telling that when given the opportunity to give a vote of confidence to Pat Shurmur and Gettleman, Tisch just said that they were going to have a very honest conversation, him and Mara, after the season ends. So I think we're in for a very fascinating offseason that could begin in earnest if the Giants lose their next two games.
Yeah, I mean, I think, Matt, you brought this up and you talked about the Jet game. And leading up to the Jet game, we talked about, like, that's the game Pat Shurmur can't afford to lose. That's the game that they need to win. And they go out and they get just, you know, they lose that game. It was close, but the Jets were really in control of that game from the start. Now it seems like it's like, well, they can't lose to Miami and Washington. So my question is, what do you think their breaking point is? Like, have they reached it, or are they going, like, where is it? Is it a loss to Miami? Is it a loss to Miami and Washington? Is it getting embarrassed on Monday Night Football against the Eagles? Like, where is the breaking point with these guys?
I believe the breaking point would be losing to the Dolphins at home. Right. And I'm right there with you. I think I even wrote it going into the Jet game that was the line of demarcation. I think it was, what, 5-6 losses in a row going into the bye week after they lost to the Jets. And of course, as embarrassing as it is to lose to that franchise, that would be enough to push John Mara across the edge. But you have to remember, there were still, what, 6 or 7 games remaining at that point in time. The fact that they haven't gotten better, and the fact that if they lose to the Eagles to tie the longest losing streak in franchise history, which would be 9 games, if they then lose to the Dolphins at home to make it 10 games, a new record of futility, I don't think he coaches the next week against Washington, because at that point, there's 2 games left. They've already made the switch because of the injury from Daniel Jones to Eli Manning, so there's no need to worry about a coaching change for Daniel Jones kind of mucking up his development or putting a new system in his head for 5-6 games down the stretch. You can get by with Mike Shula or Thomas McGay. He is your interim head coach against the Redskins and against the Eagles to close out the season with Eli Manning as the quarterback. No impact on Daniel Jones. So I think that the season has kind of unfolded in a way where it would have made a lot of sense to fire Pat Shurmur after the Jet game. But I think that you couldn't do it because you were still playing Daniel Jones. You still needed to worry about his development. And there's something to be said for him finishing out a season in one system and not going from scheme to scheme and then going into having his third head coach going into his second season. I don't think the Giants wanted that. I think that's very detrimental for the development of any quarterback. But now that you look at how this has played out with Manning as the quarterback and the potential of losing 10 games in a row, I think there's a very real possibility that Thomas McGahee, the special teams coach, or Mike Shula, the offensive coordinator, is the interim head coach when they get on the train to go down to FedEx the weekend before Christmas.
Wow.
Yeah. I mean, we just went down this road, right? We just did this 2 years ago. We did it with Ben McAdoo, Jerry Reese, Tom Coughlin, and the, firing the head coach, keeping the GM intact, and it
2 years later, blowing it up.
Yeah, and then just blowing it up again. What are the odds the Giants repeat the same mistake and retain Dave Gettleman and hire a new head coach, only for them to then fire Dave Gettleman? Or I won't even say fire, because they'll probably quote-unquote retire him. To me, it just doesn't make any sense. I know to a lot of the other Giants fans that utilize common sense, which is not so common, it doesn't make sense. Especially given Dave Gettleman's age, his health concerns, and the state of the team. He said it himself. If he could live in a world where he could draft the Giants' next quarterback for the next 10, 15 years, he would just retire and go to Cape Cod. And I think we're at the point where most Giants fans would be quite all right with that.
Yeah, I think that that's the scenario the fan base would prefer to see, and I'm not so sure that there aren't people in that building who would prefer to see a different GM in here next year. What I would do and what I think the Giants are going to do are two different things. I think that when you look at it on paper, there's a lot of optimism about at least, you know, some of the members of this year's draft class, some of the members of last year's draft class, and you're picking number two overall again. And, you know, rational thinking people like you and I, you'd like to see a forward-thinking, progressive, analytics-driven general manager in there to make that pick or trade back and acquire more picks, which I don't think that's the move this year when you have Chase Young sitting there in your lap potentially at number two overall, but a more analytics-driven, forward-thinking philosophy to further this rebuild when you're going to have a bevy of draft capital at your disposal. You're going to have $60 million in cap space, which should be around the 8th or 10th total in the NFL, to do just about whatever you'd like. I think the prudent move is to move on from Dave Gettleman if you're going to fire the head coach. But the way that I could see it playing out is John Mara sticking with what works, sticking with what's comfortable, allowing Dave Gettleman to hire the next head coach and him bringing in someone like Ron Rivera or Jason Garrett, who I think either one of those guys would be, if not home run hires, I think they'd be triple hires. I think they get a little bit of a bad rap from Giants fans. I think either one would be a significant upgrade over Pat Shurmur. But I think that you need to go in a more progressive, forward-thinking, different way. So my plan's a little bit different than what I think John Mara and Steve Tisch's plan will be.
I just think that if you, like, with the Giants, I think it's bigger than just firing the GM. Like you said, you have to reevaluate your football operations. And you got to look and see
what
am I doing wrong that other teams are doing right? Like, what's not working for me? And I don't think the simple solution is, hey, you know, Dave, just retire and we're going to make Kevin Abrams the GM. No, I think you have to look at it full circle. And I've spoke about this like ad nauseam with Ethan on here, outside of the podcast. But if you were John Mara, I think you sort of hinted at this, right? But we're going to put you on the spot. If you're John Mara after this season, right, and you can tell me how you think this season is going to finish out, whether they're going to lose the remainder of the games, they're going to win one more, two more, however way you think it's going to finish out, what do you do in the offseason? I'll point to Dave Gettleman, the front office, and the coaching staff. What do you do? Let's start there. What do you do with those guys?
Yeah, realistically, guys, I mean, do either of you think that they are going to be favored in any of these last four games?
No.
Maybe a 2-point favorite at home against the Dolphins.
But only because the Dolphins. Home.
Correct. And the way the Dolphins are playing and what they've done and picked off some teams the last couple weeks, and they're really starting to play for Brian Flores, even though that roster is one of the least talented in the NFL. I think the Dolphins win that game. And if that's the case, as I've already outlined, I think that's the end of the Pat Shurmur era. So at that point, I'd probably rip the Band-Aid off if I were John Mara. I would probably repeat history and fire Dave Gettleman and Pat Shurmur on the Monday after the Dolphin game. I'd install Thomas McGahee as the interim head coach because, I mean, if you look at what the special teams have done up there the last couple of years, I think that's one thing. But if you show me a great special teams coach, I'm going to show you a great football coach. So I would make Thomas McGahee the interim guy, give him a chance to showcase his wares for the final two games of the season against Washington and then against Philadelphia. And I would make an all-in push to talk to three people. My short list for GM would be Ed Dodds, who's the assistant general manager of the Indianapolis Colts, working with Chris Ballard. You just look at what that franchise has done over the last 3 years, how well they've drafted.
Yeah, they traded well back instead of taking a running back.
Correct. And we can all talk about whether Saquon Barkley was the right pick or the wrong pick. I think he was the right pick, just not at number two. It was a colossal failure not to try and sell interest in Sam Darnold to move back to three with the Jets and pick up some draft picks to take Barkley and have more draft capital. But that's another story for another pod. But Ed Dodds, to me, I think learning at the knee of Chris Ballard and what that franchise has had to endure with Andrew Luck's retirement 11 days before the regular season begins, or even, you know, closer to the regular season than that, how well well they've drafted, I think he would be the first phone call I would make. And if he doesn't take the job, I'd bring Lou Riddick back in for another interview, because I think if you listen to Lou, he's one of the brighter football minds on television right now. And I think that his experience in front offices across the league, learning from some of the top GMs, I think that's very valuable. And I think he has a set plan on how to rebuild a franchise. And then I'd also talk to Daniel Jeremiah, because I think that if we see what Oakland was able to do with Mike Mayock, a guy who studies the draft, understands the analytics side of things, who's a top talent evaluator. Again, he's spent time, and I know the Eagles front office and a couple other front offices through his career. So he has front office talent evaluation experience in addition to being one of the brighter college football and draft minds around. So he'd be the third guy I'd interview. So I'd interview Ed Dodds. I'd interview Daniel Jeremiah and Louis Riddick. And as far as head coach goes, obviously I let the GM hire the head coach, but I'd submit a couple of names. I go to John DeFilippo, the defensive coordinator of the Jacksonville Jaguars. You look what he did with Carson Wentz in 2017 when I was still on that beat, and you look where Wentz was. And I wrote in August, and I still feel this way, I think Daniel Jones had a much higher starting point than Wentz did coming into the league. There were a lot of legitimate issues about Carson Wentz's ball security and his release point and his throwing motion. And DeFilippo fixed that day one of training camp and mini camps in 2017, and he had an MVP caliber season before he got hurt. I think DeFilippo was a bright offensive mind and a quarterback whisperer. He'd be a guy that I would call. Greg Roman in Baltimore is certainly a top candidate, because I think that some of the innovative ways that he's lined up Lamar Jackson, and when he was in San Francisco, kind of putting Colin Kaepernick out wide and in the backfield and making defenses really appreciate his mobility. If you close your eyes and think about what Greg Roman can do and the innovative concepts he come up with Jones and Saquon Barkley and Sterling Shepard and Darius Slayton and Evan Ingram, I think you'd be pretty excited about that. And then, of course, you can talk to about the Josh McDanielses and whether or not he's the head coach and waiting in New England, or if he would talk about coming to the Giants. But those are some of the guys that would be at the top of my list. And then, of course, Ron Rivera and Jason Garrett, I think, are worth interviewing. But if it's me, I'm going in the direction of somebody like a Roman or like a DeFilippo or somebody of that ilk.
Interesting that you didn't bring up Matt Rhule. But one guy that you brought up that I want to touch on a little bit more, and it's because every time I tweet about the GM search, his name is just inevitably brought up, Louis Riddick. And obviously, you know, the Mike Mayock ESPN effect, you know, the hype train doesn't stop, and especially because he was the only outside voice the Giants interviewed in their latest GM search. I just look at, you know, I'm very conflicted on Louis Riddick, because I look at his record, his drafting record when he's with the Eagles, and it's very good. And then I listen to what he's been talking about the last few years. He said he would have drafted Saquon Barkley, which, in my opinion, beating a dead horse, was the wrong pick. He says he would have drafted Dwayne Haskins over Daniel Jones, which obviously is still very early, but the early indications are not the right pick. And, you know, it's very arguable that if those were the two picks that he were to make, that this franchise would be in an even worse position than it is now.
I don't know about that, because you'd probably still have Odell Beckham Jr., right? You're probably not trading Odell. And you'd be able to. And here was my plan. And this was my defense of the Saquon Barkley pick. And again, take it for a bit of a grain of salt, because I have Penn State season tickets and I went to high school across the street from Saquon's high school. So I went to Parkland. He went to Whitehall. But I'll say this. I defended that pick up until the Odell Beckham trade. And here's why. Because if you told me that you did not love Sam Darnold, or you did not love Lamar Jackson or any of those
quarterbacks, right?
I would have taken Josh Allen over Darnold, I think, and I would have definitely probably not taken Darnold at 2. I don't think that would have been the pick there. But if you told me you didn't love the quarterbacks and you were all in on Saquon Barkley, I think at that point you needed to sell to the Jets that you were interested in Sam Darnold. You were going to take him. You had his name on the card. Make me your best trade offer. And then you end up getting probably an extra second-round pick, probably at least a third, and maybe even a first-round pick this year and still had Saquon Barkley.
Correct.
Right? And you would have dropped Barkley into the backfield with Beckham and Shepard and Ingram and started to rebuild your offensive line a little bit. And my belief of why that was the right pick is because when you have all of those weapons around you, then you drop the rookie quarterback in, and that's going to hasten his development when he has all of those guys spreading the field, all of that speed on the field with him. But instead, you remove Odell Beckham Jr., which is your deep threat over the top that creates the space for Barkley and takes some pressure off the quarterback. To me, you took a significant step backwards, whether it was going to be Daniel Jones, Haskins, or anybody, by trading Odell Beckham Jr. That's why, to me, I defend the Saquon Barkley pick for that reason. But when you take Beckham out of the equation, why didn't you just take Josh Allen? Why didn't you just trade back? Why didn't you just take Sam Darnold if you wanted to develop a quarterback and eventually get rid of his best weapon?
I mean, I get where you're coming from, but from my perspective and what I believe to be many other fans' perspective, it's quarterback or you trade back. I mean, the value of a running back beating a dead horse again, we've done it a million times. And don't get me wrong, Saquon Barkley is a tremendous player. But I feel like I've touched on this a few times. It's sort of a catch-22 where yeah. Saquon Barkley is, he's a luxury. He's the final piece
totally
of
agree.
The puzzle. But why it's a catch-22 is if you're picking at that second spot, chances are 99% of the time your team is very, very far away. And most fans saw the writing on the wall with Eli Manning and that it was time to just sort of start over. And you could have done that with Odell Beckham. And if you wanted to, you know, I obviously, big Odell Beckham fan, big supporter. If the whole argument was it's not worth to re-sign him because you're going to get rid of Eli Manning and you're going to blow it up and you're going to start over, then that's totally fine. But the Saquon Barkley pick is just a luxury that the Giants could not afford. And to not pick up the phone and listen to the hot dog and the pretzel and the popcorn, it set the Giants franchise back at least 2 years that we know of. We'll see going into next year.
I wrote Monday that the longer you keep Dave Gettleman, there's a chance you've set this franchise back a decade.
Right.
It's terrible. He's horrible. Like you, I read that piece and I'm like, I couldn't agree with more of what you said.
Appreciate it, man.
It's the overall direction that he doesn't have. Like, what's the end goal here? Like, you came in here and you talked about how you value the offensive line and it's all about the offensive line, and then you draft two offensive linemen and 12 picks, right? And then you say that you value
no tackles.
No tackle.
I don't count Big George because you took him in the seventh round, and that's just jumping the line to get the priority free agent that you want. They did not invest a legitimate draft pick in an offensive tackle in either of Dave Gettleman's first two drafts. And to me, that's disgraceful when you look at the state that the offensive line was in when Gettleman became the GM. He whiffed on Patrick Amame. He didn't bring in any meaningful competition for Ereck Flowers. Didn't draft a tackle in his first draft. Signed Nate Solder to that contract as a backup after losing out on Andrew Norwell. Let's not forget that Norwell was their number one target in free agency that year, and he decided to go to Jacksonville. And you didn't draft a tackle this year until round seven. I'm sorry. If you're going to commit to the offensive line, Kevin Zeitler, nice pickup. Last year, the number one guard in the league. I believe Pro Football Focus had him as the number five or six guard in the league this year. Will Hernandez had a decent up and down inconsistent rookie year. He's taken a big step back in this season. I spoke to one scout who said that when you combine Daniel Jones trying to read the subtitles on Fast Forward when it comes to diagnosing run looks and run blitzes with Will Hernandez missing assignments and not knowing what he's supposed to do on a given play, that's how you get the second half of the season with Saquon Barkley. But if you're going to commit to the offensive line, you need to commit to the offensive line. And that's when one of the biggest gaps of Dave Gettleman in the first 2 years, in my opinion.
Yeah, I think, like you talk about the Saquon pick, whether it was a right pick or wrong pick, when you take Saquon number two overall, running back number two overall, that means your whole offense is centered around him. He's the vocal point, or else why would you invest that high of a draft pick? So that means that I have a running back. I need to build my offensive line because in order to maximize the value of that player, I got to be able to protect at the line of scrimmage for him. And he didn't do that. So it's just, again, it's no direction with this guy. I really, like, over the last 2 years, I mean, there's enough
guys, what's
there.
What's their identity? What's their
exactly.
identity?
Exactly.
They can't run the ball effectively with Saquon Barkley. They can't stretch the field often enough, even though Darius Slayton, who's probably a very good number three receiver in this league already as a rookie, you're asking him to essentially be your number one or number two wide receiver. In the secondary on defense, and we've barely touched on the defense, you know, they can't get off the field. They keep making the same mistakes week in and week out. The linebacking core might be the worst linebacking core in the NFL, and outside of Marcus Golden, they can't generate any pressure on the passer. They have no identity. And this isn't just Dave Gettleman's arrival with the Giants. He's had two off seasons to fix this, and they have no identity. They have no strength.
They even the stuff that he said, like he's invested in defensive tackles, right? I mean, he's drafted like three of them in the last 2 years, and he's also traded for Leonard Williams. They can't stop the run either. Like they cannot do anything that they claim that they are going to do in terms of investing into that position, to the defensive line. They can't rush the passer. They can't stop the run, right? Their linebacking core is a disaster. They're not invested nearly as much. The one investment that they made in Alec Ogletree has been a complete disaster. On the offensive line, you go out and give Nate Solder the contract. He's been an abomination. So there's enough there. When people say he needs more than 2 years, no. There's enough there for us to see that Dave Gettleman has this team going nowhere. There's no direction, like you said, Matt. There's been so many whiffs, not only in free agency, but trades, the Leonard Williams trade. I mean, at what point do I think this owner says, you know what, it's just not working with this guy? And I think there's enough there, and we've seen it over the course of the last 2 years that he's been here. He's had more than enough resources, the number two overall pick. Remember, prior to that 2018 draft, the last time the Giants were picking number two overall was 1981-2 when Lawrence Taylor was there. So yeah. It's not like he came in here with nothing to work with. He had enough to give Odell Beckham the largest wide receiver contract in NFL history. He had enough to make Nate Solder the highest paid, you know, offensive tackle in NFL history. He was able to trade for Alec Ogletree in his contract, which was a top three salary. So he had more than enough. And he also had some players here that he could trade off to get more picks in JPP, in Snacks Harrison, and some of these other guys. The point is that his guys...
Hey, guys, how'd they replace JPP? How's that
work
out? Other than Marcus Golden, who you could have signed as a free agent anyway to add to JPP, they haven't been able to replicate that production.
They haven't. They have no – I mean, think about it. What are the five – I always say these are the five most important positions. Obviously, the quarterback, and the jury's still out on Daniel Jones.
And we'll talk about him in a second anyway.
The offensive tackle. Where's the offensive tackle? Has he filled that spot yet? Nate Solder isn't it. How about wide receiver? It was Odell Beckham. He's gone. Defensively, who's your pass rusher? Do they have an alpha pass rusher yet? No. Cornerback. Who's the cornerback yet? Who's the guy on the back end? They haven't filled any of those five yet. And to me, it's like there have been enough resources where we can at least check off one of those five boxes. And we haven't checked off any of them yet with this guy. And it's at this point, it's like, what exactly, you know, is he doing here? What is the purpose here? Because we're 2 years into it, and you can make a case they're just as bad as they were before he took over.
Yeah, no, I agree. I mean, as you said, the jury is still out on Daniel Jones. And again, if he winds up being a franchise quarterback, applaud Dave Gettleman for standing pat and taking him at number six. But boy, you passed on Josh Allen and Ed Oliver this year, two elite, potentially all-pro defensive players, to take Daniel Jones when the common perception is that you could have had Daniel Jones via trading up and potentially even at 17. You better be right. And I've seen a lot to like about Daniel Jones. I think he's had moments of brilliance, and there have been plays where you look at and you just say, wow, how did he pull that off? The first touchdown pass to Shepard the other day, the touchdown in the fourth quarter to Golden Tate against the Bears. Some of the scrambles where he just, you know, finds his way out of the pocket somehow by hook or by crook, where you say, well, okay, I can see him becoming a franchise quarterback, but let's not forget 4 weeks in a row, rather, he lost a fumble that was returned for a touchdown. He lost a fumble that the Bears converted into a touchdown on their ensuing possession that basically put that game on ice. And the turnovers are a legitimate issue. You can't turn the football over 21 times in 11 starts and expect to compete. Needs to overcome shell coverage, which has been thrown at him ever since the Patriot game on Thursday night. There are things he needs to overcome in order to become a legitimate franchise quarterback. So if he checks the box, good for Dave Gettleman and happy retirement in Cape Cod eventually. But they're going to need to see him take a big step forward. Carson Wentz led the Eagles on a Super Bowl type season in his second season. Jared Goff went to a Super Bowl and played the entire season in his third season. The quarterbacks take big leaps from year one to year two. Look what's happening in Buffalo this year. Look what's happening in Baltimore. Look what's happening with Patrick Mahomes, his first year as a starter, his second season, what he did taking the Chiefs to the AFC Championship game. Lamar Jackson and Patrick Mahomes are generational talents, and I understand that. Jones might not be on that level, but he was still the number six overall pick in the draft. So you need to see him take a significant step forward next season to feel comfortable with him being your franchise quarterback, at least in my opinion.
So let's get into Dan Jones then. We have a thing on the podcast we call the Danometer, the Dan-o-meter.
The Dan-o-meter, I love it.
The Dan-o-meter. And every week, well, not every week, we've been slacking to be quite honest, but whenever we do remember to update our Danometers, it is the percentage out of 100 we feel that Dan Jones can be the franchise quarterback. And Weiss and I, that's the beauty of the Danometer. It's very liberal in how you decide to assess it for yourself. For me,
I love it already.
For me, the way I assess my weekly Danometer is he starts at 0%, and every week he can go up, stay the same, or go down. I think the last time I did the Danometer, I was at like 15 or 20%. I'm still probably in that realm. I may be a little higher, maybe like 25%. The issue with me is people will constantly, and I actually want your thoughts on this, right? People constantly point to the numbers. Oh, he's on pace to break this record for a rookie quarterback and this touchdown and this amount of yards. I don't care about the numbers. And I don't care about the numbers because so many times in these games, the defense is so bad. And Dan Jones is starting with a 14-0 deficit, a 17-0 deficit. He is down 30-14 to the Patriots and trying to come back. And with the defense as bad as it is, I think a lot of it is the defense playing a little bit soft. Dan Jones in a pass-friendly situation. And I don't want to call it stat padding because it's not like Eli Manning of last year where he's just checking down, checking down, checking down.
Look at his numbers in the fourth quarter and go look at the numbers last week in the fourth quarter until the Packers called off the dogs on his second to last offensive possession. I'm with you that there's certainly some legitimacy to that claim.
Exactly, right. So my whole point is I want people to ignore the numbers. And as boomer as it's going to sound, when it comes to Dan Jones' rookie season, I think the primary way to analyze him is the eye test because I think the stats are padded a little bit, and you just need to say, all right, he's making these turnovers. These are the turnovers that are his fault. He's making these nice throws. These nice throws were because of him and not because of bad coverage. And we've seen some of those, I call them flashes. The touchdown against the Bears to Golden Tate was beautiful. He made some great throws in the snow to Sterling Shepard. And I like to use those to update my Danometer. I'm far from convinced that he is 100% a franchise quarterback. Like you said, I think that leap from year one to year two is going to be crucial. And the fact of the matter is, and why I and I'm a Giants fan. I fucking hate Giants fans because last year and this year, fans just shit on Sam Darnold and they shit on Baker Mayfield. And whenever, and I think our good friend Art Stapleton used this analogy, it's like you're the neighbor who you hate, his house is on fire, and you decide to go out into the street, point and laugh. Meanwhile, someone's hacking your bank account and stealing your car. It's just way too early to judge any of these guys. And anyone that says Dan Jones is a surefire franchise quarterback is a liar. And anyone that says anyone from the 2018 draft class isn't a franchise quarterback is a surefire liar. It's just too early to tell. That's where I stand on the issue. I'm far from convinced. My hope is not lost. I've seen some good things. Year two is really going to be that deciding factor. And I think he's obviously done enough good to earn that chance to be the starting guy in year two, to not have a Josh Rosen, Kyler Murray type conversation with where the Giants are projected to be picking. But where do you stand personally with your evaluation of Dan Jones?
I'm going to go two directions here, right? Because me personally, my Danometer on Daniel Jones, I think it's somewhere around the 66 or 67. Because I kind of look at quarterbacks in two things. How high is the ceiling that I've seen and how low is the floor? The floor is pretty low. 21 turnovers as a rookie. People are going to say that I'm too critical of him and he's learning and he has no weapons and blah, 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 blah. A lot of these interceptions are on reads or telegraphing throws or overthrowing or not being able to overcome a certain coverage scheme that teams have been running for 5 or 6 weeks. Part of that's on Jones. Part of that's on coaching for not giving him the tools to beat that. That's too deep shell coverage. The other side of the coin is how high is the ceiling? The Golden Tate touchdown pass against the Cowboys on Monday Night Football. The Bears touchdown pass that you alluded to. The throws to Sterling Shepard in the snow. Those all show me a pretty high ceiling. And I wrote this in August. I still believe it. I think he has more pure arm talent than Carson Wentz. I think he has all of the physical tools to be a franchise quarterback. So I think it's about a 66 or a 67. Now, where I'm going to just caution people that I don't think this is going to happen, but I wouldn't rule it out. If the Giants do fire Dave Gettleman and they bring in a new GM and a new head coach and you're picking number two overall, are we convinced that they're not going to look at Joe Burrow?
100% convinced that – and this is why, right? I'll compare it to the Redskins model. So I don't know if you know this, but we spoke about it on the show before. Weiss is from the D.C. area and he's got some, you know, some Redskins connections and some Redskins friends. And – you know, I think it's general knowledge at this point that Dwayne Haskins was a Snyder pick. Correct. And whoever they hire as head coach moving forward has to be okay with Dwayne Haskins, that they are not going to give up. I have
sure.
that
and
same
that's
belief
how you get,
about,
that's how you
about
get
Dan
hiring
Jones.
Pat Shurmur because you believe that he can win with Eli Manning. And,
right.
And again,
I'm not saying it's the right move. I'm just saying that that's
I agree.
Where,
I'm just playing devil's advocate sure. here that if you're going to hire a new GM with a new philosophy, you need to hire a new GM with a new philosophy, right? Because if not, you're going to hire the next Dave Gettleman. So, again, I think Daniel Jones is around the 66 or 67. I think that John Mara and the Giants' current power structure is all in on Daniel Jones. I just caution people that if the whispers start in March and early April that the Giants are working out Joe Burrow or they're flying to Oregon to have a private meeting with Justin Herbert or they're checking in on the medical records on Tua Tagovailoa, that this is what happens when you clean house. So personally, the Matt Lombardo Danometer, right around a 66 or a 67. Some things he has to work on, but a lot of things he does really, really well.
Yeah, so I agree with you guys. I think with the whole, if they clean house and there's a new regime in here, especially if there's like a major front office shakeup, especially with like Chris Mara and some of those other behind the scenes guys that are actually calling a lot of the football decisions, I think there's definitely a chance that the new regime looks at Joe Burrow or Tua or Justin Herbert really, really hard. Now, ultimately, will they pull the trigger? I don't know. But as it pertains to Daniel Jones, I think with this Danometer, it all goes back to, okay, what has he done? Which box has he checked off for you so far? And there's been a couple of boxes that he's checked off. And listen, the turnover problem is a real concern. Anybody that tries to downplay it as he's a rookie or, well, so-and-so had this amount of fumbles last year, to me, that you're just ignoring facts. And I think the turnover issue is it's serious. It's not... Is it coaching? Sure. Does he need to be coached up on ball security? Yes. But a lot of it is him. He's got to be able to have the pocket awareness.
Let's remember, guys, this was a lot of the same concerns that they had about him at Duke and when he
exactly.
came out of Duke.
Right. So the ball security, specifically the fumbles, the interceptions, obviously we can get into it, but I don't worry too much about interceptions for a rookie, especially last Sunday with the weather, and obviously now we found out with the ankle injury, but the fumbles are a huge concern for me. And like you said, 21 turnovers, I think 15 fumbles since he's taken over in week three. It is a huge concern. But so you, Matt, put it at 67% sure that the Giants found their franchise quarterback, right? That's what you're.
That's about where I'm at on this. this because I think that the flaws are fixable. And the moments where he's looked brilliant, he's looked very brilliant, right? And he did have the fourth quarter drive, comeback game-winning drive against Tampa. And we can all talk about the fact that Janoris Jenkins got 180 yards and three scores and should have allowed a fourth if Mike Evans doesn't stumble. But that shows a lot of moxie to score the game-winning touchdown on a fourth quarter run up the middle like that. Made a lot of nice throws, and I think that his command of being in the NFL, he's not a guy who came in with deer in the headlights. He just needs to work on the little things, the big things rather, reading zone coverage and protecting the football and accuracy, maybe getting to his checkdowns quicker. But a lot of those things are scheme related. So I think that if I'm grading Daniel Jones in the Daniel Jones report card every week, I've given out a lot of C's, B minuses to D pluses. And that's where I think that about a 66 or a 67 kind of falls right in that mold.
So I think in terms of whether or not the Giants have found their franchise quarterback, coming into this week, I was at 57% sure. I'm 57% sure the Giants have found their guy. And to be honest, I will say I'm at 55 right now. And the 2% goes to, and again, it's not a big deal, but the injury. And obviously, because I'm, Giant fans, we're not used to the starting quarterback getting hurt. So I'm not taking a whole bunch off, but because your quarterback gets injured his rookie season, it is a little bit of a, it's like a wake-up call, per se, because you're not used to it as a Giant fan. Eli Manning, the Iron Man streak, we've never seen him get hurt. So I'm at 55%. But I'm with you. I think he has checked off a lot of the stuff. He has made a lot of wow plays. And I guess, the ball placement has been impressive. I still think he has work to do in terms of throwing the deep ball. His deep ball accuracy has not been good. A lot of that could be the talent around him. I think that's at that point you can bring in the talent excuse. But again, as someone who almost cried when Daniel Jones' name was called, especially with Josh Allen on the board and Ed Oliver, who I liked a lot, I've been impressed with what I've seen from Daniel Jones. Remember, this was a guy that a lot of people wrote about, in April and in leading up to the draft about how he wasn't a first-round pick, and this is a guy that's going to be lucky to be a backup in this league. Well, Daniel Jones has shown that he belongs, and I think he's shown that he can be a capable starter. Now, whether or not he's a franchise guy, and I think how I define a franchise guy is a guy that can lead you to a Super Bowl, I think that we're still going to find that out. But right now, I sit at 55%, and if I don't see him again this season, we'll go into next season 55% sure that we found our franchise quarterback, and it'll be a big year two for him. But again, I've been impressed with what I've seen so far, but there are concerns that I think everyone should understand are not just some things that we can excuse as, hey, he's just a rookie, or hey, the coach stinks, or hey, he has no talent. No, there's still concerns there with Daniel Jones.
Totally agree. I think you're spot on.
All right. I think we got to wrap this up shortly. So let's end on this. Matt, we'll pose you this question. Give us, it can be as in-depth or high-level as you want, how do you fix the Giants?
Yeah, I think that we start with the house cleaning. I think you start with bringing in a new GM, whether it's Ed Dodds, whether it's Daniel Jeremiah, whether it's Lewis Riddick, whoever. Get a forward-thinking, progressive GM who can build a forward-thinking and progressive front office in place. I think you hire an innovative offensive mind with a track record of developing quarterbacks, whether that's Greg Roman, whether that's John DeFilippo, whether that's you can throw any name you want out there, Josh McDaniels, whomever, who's an offensive mind with an experience developing quarterbacks. You need that in place. And I would probably bring in a 4-3 defensive coordinator because I think the Giants personnel better fits the 4-3 versus the 3-4, even though you spent 2 years drafting 3-4 caliber players. if you're going to
Hey, you said burn it down.
if you're going to re-sign Leonard Williams, make him a 4-3 defensive end. Don't you know, make him a 3-4 outside linebacker or a 3-4 edge player. That's probably where I would start. I would draft Chase Young, number 2 overall, because I think he has the chance to be a thrice-in-a-generation talent in the mold of Nick Bosa and Joey Bosa. I think that he's that type of a player. I think you have to go out and you need to, you know, find yourself an offensive tackle in round 2. You have to find yourself a guard in round 3 or round 4. You need to find a field stretching wide receiver. And I'd probably sign one and draft one just to get an infusion of talent and weapons around Daniel Jones. I remember in Philly when I was going into the 2017 season, Carson Wentz's second year, the Eagles had drafted Nelson Aguilar a couple years prior, and they traded for Alshon Jeffrey to give Carson Wentz a legitimate weapon. Sterling Shepard might be that guy. Golden Tate might be that guy. I think you need to go out and get a dynamic, game-changing weapon at wide receiver for Daniel Jones, because that's how you develop a quarterback. The Rams did the same thing, trading for Brandon Cooks, bringing him in and pairing him with Jared Goff. So, and Hollywood Brown down in Baltimore. You guys noticing a trend here? Game-breaking, game-changing wide receivers with young quarterbacks.
Speed, it makes all the difference in the world. Height and clunkiness, like Dave Gettleman likes to draft.
Correct. So that's probably where I would start. I'm sure that sometime this week you're going to see a much more in-depth blueprint on nj.com/Giants. You can check it out at Matt Lombardo NFL on Twitter. I'll have it there. But I think that's probably the baseline starting point that I just outlined for you guys. So you got the Cliff Notes version before the story goes live.
There we go.
How about that?
There you go.
Everyone got a sneak peek.
Hey, Matt, before we let you go, I got a question for you. The NFC East, you're familiar with it. It's really bad this year. Who wins it?
Dallas Cowboys. Because I think that they're still the most talented team in the division. I think Dak Prescott, people give me, you know, flack for this all the time. I think he's probably a top 10 to 12 quarterback in this league. You have Ezekiel Elliott, Amari Cooper, a game-changing, speedy wide receiver that they gave Dak Prescott. I think the Cowboys are the more dominant team. I think the Eagles have flaws all over that roster. I think that their locker room, the fabric that kind of kept that team together from 16 to 18, has really come untethered this year. I think there are a lot of question marks about that coaching staff, and I think that if they don't make the playoffs, you're going to see a lot of turnover in Philadelphia. So I think the Cowboys take care of business on the road at the Link. And I think Dallas wins the division. I don't know that they win a playoff game, but I think Dallas is the champion of this division that probably doesn't deserve a champion this season.
I agree with all of that.
Those are fair points, but I will say I think the Eagles are going to win the division. And you brought up a good point with the Eagles. They've lost a lot of smart people. Frank Reich, John DeFilippo, guys like that have left and gone. Joe Douglas, yes, as well. But I think with the Eagles, I just think that they have a much easier schedule. And I know they just lost to Miami, but I think they're going to beat up on the Giants at home. And I think they'll beat Washington. And I think they'll get that home game with Dallas. Listen, Dallas has a lot of issues. That coach, we don't know what's going to happen with Jason Garrett and Jerry Jones. It seems like every week Jerry Jones is calling out Jason Garrett. We don't know what the locker room is like. But I think Philly wins that division. And they're not going to win a playoff game. But I don't think Dallas is – there's too much outside noise with Dallas right now that
you could be right. I mean, when you have Jerry Jones sticking his foot in his mouth every other day talking about Jason Garrett, that's something that I didn't factor in there. But if you're just looking on talent alone and the track record of those two teams when they play each other, I think the Cowboys have the Eagles' number right now. I think they're just the more talented team.
I've said this before. I think if you look at just talent, Dallas is probably one of the most talented teams in the NFL. Just top to bottom, you look at defensively, offensively, they are fit to win. But I don't know. I just see too much outside noise with that team right now. And I think Philly wins the East.
That and their coach.
Yeah.
Which is a big
You mean the future Giants coach?
Exactly. That is the biggest problem.
Don't do that to us, Matt. Yeah. Don't do that.
Bite your tongue. All right. I think that's about it, Matt. We'll let you go. But let's wrap up with the housekeeping. Follow us on Twitter. You can follow me at EthanGSN, follow Weiss NYG Daily, the blog at GothamSN, and Matt at M Lombardo NFL. And subscribe.
Lombardo NFL.
Matt Lombardo.
I don't need anybody else thinking I'm Michael Lombardi. I got that from Brandon Brooks in the Eagles locker room. I get it from people on Twitter. I get it from emailers. Oh, I get it from certain Giants players. It's Matt Lombardo, not Mike Lombardi.
Oh boy. Well, you just plugged your own Twitter there then.
At Matt Lombardo NFL. There you go.
Yes, there it is. Go follow him. And anything you want to plug before we get out of here?
No, I just really appreciate you guys having me on. It was a fun time, and hopefully we'll get to do it again soon.
All right.
Absolutely.
That'll do it. All right. That's it for us this week, and we'll talk to you guys in 2 weeks, actually. Weiss, surprise, I'm going on vacation. But we'll talk to you guys soon.
All right.